As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Ben Simmons.
Let's be honest, there's 29 NBA teams and then there's a G League roster with a few stars.
They have a math problem offensively.
Welcome to the Athletic NBA Show on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Man, you tell them to keep having fun because everybody, you know, y'all played in the league. Everybody be like, oh, it's just a regular season, just a regular season. You're right, but you got to play the games that's in front of you.
With a group that works like they do, the group that embraces some of our mantras, we talk about getting better every day. We talk about playing together. When you do those things, you end up on a stage like this. For our city of Milwaukee, NBA champions. Yeah! It's big time.
They have a math problem offensively.
This is Nerder, She Wrote with your host, Dave Dufour.
With Mo DeKeel.
Are you ready to be entertained?
Hello and welcome to the Athletic NBA Show. Special Thursday edition of Nerder, She Wrote. I'm Dave Dufour, joined as I am just about every week by Seth and Mo. What's up, guys?
Oh, not a whole lot, Dave.
Yeah, beginning of the year. Like, this is like, we're getting into the doldrums a little bit, although, you know, we've had some excitement, you know, Lance making a stance and all that stuff. We're kind of getting into the long part of the season. Seth, have you been pacing yourself to just, you know, kind of get your own internal momentum to carry you through January to the All-Star break?
No, I think, like, the trade deadline is kind of where the kind of exhale happens. Like we're entering trade season. This is fun. You know, we're going to, I don't know how actually if there's going to be that many trades this year. Cause I think that the combination of teams still kind of sorting through how the play-in tournament works for that. And also just I feel like there's just less information that everyone has because teams are weird and we don't know where anyone is. And also I feel like most decision makers have been scrambling to get hardship players rather than, you know, doing the normal kibitzing about, you know, who's available for what and who wants to get moved and all that kind of stuff.
But of course, like we are beginning to see small little hints, right? Teams are creating roster spots and opening up opportunities. Of course, we had a very, very tiny trade and Oklahoma City ended up with another draft pick. Like it's just how this works. it's nature healing, folks. Like that's where we're at now. And you can kind of just sense it's beginning to come.
Man, you snuck that one in there.
Had to. You know, yeah. I had to.
Also, you know, the Cavs traded for Rajon Rondo to replace Ricky Rubio. You know, look, double R.
All
double
about
R,
the vibes.
I get it. You don't have to, you know, maybe he just fits perfectly in the alphabetical order roster sheet. You know, you get it. Definitely different vibes, though. So we'll see what happens, though. Rondo's got a good reputation with young guys. I think maybe he can keep the energy up a little bit.
It's a good short-term fix, like in the immediate moment of like, we got to do something right now. And then it buys them whatever, a couple of weeks to try to figure out the proper way to go. That's all I got for that trade. Sorry.
Yeah. Well, all right. Well, so let's talk about our favorite things, which this week, funny enough, we all kind of just talked ourselves into the same favorite thing. And it was the Cavs playing the Grizzlies. That game was awesome. It was a little bit of a sneak peek, I think, at what the league is going to be in 3 years, which is, you know, Memphis, as long as they can keep it together, being pretty good in the West, and Cleveland with Mobley and Garland probably being pretty good in the East. That game was back and forth until the Grizzlies turned it up.
Let's give Jared Allen. Don't leave him out. If we're talking Garland and
We're talking like, you know, the star talents. Now Jared Allen is very good.
Jared Allen's going to be an all-star this year.
Oh, and he should be. Absolutely. Yeah. He should be. But that game was awesome. For the amount of young guys in that game, it surprising amount of professionalism, if that makes sense.
Well, here the thing about that, first of all, the game was just fantastically entertaining in its own right, and it sort of reminded me of you know, a good thing about like watching and being involved in the NBA is if you get any time of the season, if you get two pretty good teams in a close game, then sort of the competitiveness takes over. And it doesn't really matter if the game doesn't mean much in standings or whatever. And it's sort of, you see this occasionally in all-star games, it's close with 9 minutes left, let's try. But even more so in a game like this, where it's two pretty good teams and all of a sudden it's just like, I want to beat those bastards. And then it just becomes a really good, intense game, even though January 4th. And it ultimately doesn't say much about the season. It's those kind of games that really propel your fandom and interest through the season. So I think that what that represents in terms of that kind of game that we've had, I think we've had a fair few of them pop up. Even despite the kind of the weirdness of rosters.
Oh no, we've had a ton of really close games that have been a lot of fun, but that's just the way it is. Close games are freaking fun, because that's when you get to see kind of teams rise up, or at least try to rise up, because then you have some guys that do some stupid things. But in general, I think just the way the season has played out, despite all the craziness, the close games have been really fascinating. I mean, the two DeMar DeRozan game winners last weekend and everything that's gone with it, it's all just been a lot of fun. I think the competitiveness in the NBA season is still there, even with these, you know, the 10-day hardships and those guys riding in and stuff like that. Those guys are playing their asses off, you know, for the most part. And I think, you know, for all the stuff we talk about, you know, and how much it sucks, those guys have been busting their butts, and they look like, you're like, hey, okay, I can see this dude sticking for a little bit. And I think that's kind of been part of the reason why we're getting some fun stuff in these close games.
Well, there's more parity, right? Like the games are, anecdotally, they feel closer. We're, like you mentioned, Mo, I mean, we've been talking about end of game stuff specifically for a lot of the season, and you've been doing it over on Twitch because of how close these games have been and tightly contested. I mean, if you look at the standings, there's a lot of teams like hanging out really close to each other. I mean, this is kind of like the league that they've dreamed of at this point. Us highlighting a Cavs Grizzlies game is kind of an example of that. It's coming to fruition a bit.
A fine vintage for.
Well, okay. So speaking of the Grizzlies, I think we should talk about them a little bit. Should we be mentioning them alongside like the Utah Jazz as that next tier of contender? I mean, it could be a little bit early, but man, they have been awesome so far this season.
They're not, I don't think we can mention them on the tier of the Jazz. I do think that unlike the Jazz, they have moves to make that put them there. I'm going to, you know, blatantly steal an idea from Hollinger when he was on him and Nate on their podcast. And what does Memphis look like if they trade for Jaylen Brown? Like that's the guy they've been trying to get, like, oh, Justice Winslow. And they thought is that guy kind of that ball handling defensive 3-4, you know, just that upgrade on the Dylan Brooks spot, which is, I think, in sort of a playoff settings, is going to be their weakness now. If they get a dude in that spot, like now we're talking.
Is Jaylen Brown gettable?
With every Boston loss. I don't know if he's gettable right now. But I think with just this is the stuff I talk about at the beginning of each year. Everybody's always happy at the start of the year. It's once you know, when you get closer to the deadline, now you have a better understanding. Like, did the Celtics really think they'd be two games below 500 at this point? You know, when they started the season, probably not, you know, and I think there's then that leads to when you have to start asking yourself questions. But this isn't a Celtics conversation. Let's talk about Memphis and your question, Dave. I think it's way too early. This team made one playoff run, you know, and a small one, knocked off the Warriors in the play-in tournament, got won one game in the playoffs, you know, and what I think it's doing. And I know this isn't your intent, but it's a little bit disrespectful to the Jazz and what they've done over the last few years in the sense of consistently being a dominant regular season team. And then, you know, at least winning a round in the playoffs or battling or going to seven games, like being in the mix. So I think it's I think Memphis has the ability to get there. I just think it's too early to put them in that tier.
Okay. So if these teams meet in the playoffs, right now, I don't think they will, because Utah right now is tracking to be the 3 seed and Memphis is tracking to be the 4 seed. That would be almost a toss up to me, just because of the way that Ja can attack Utah specifically. And maybe that's where my head is when I'm thinking about these two teams and trying to compare them. I think that Memphis would be a tough matchup, especially in a 7-game series for Utah. So you might be right there. Maybe I'm being a little disrespectful to the Jazz. Have you guys noticed how many extra possessions a game Steven Adams and Jaren Jackson are creating for Memphis? This is, you know, Mo, back to the offensive rebounding thing that we were talking about, how it's coming back. Memphis has leaned into this a little bit, and it's like a modern version of grit and grind a little bit.
Yeah, no, they battle, you know, and it's, I think a lot of people didn't understand the Steven Adams, Jonas Valanciunas trade. I actually really liked it. I thought it made a lot of sense for them with Adams. I think, you know, just the rebounding alone on the defensive end was massive, but he bangs with everybody. And it's something like it's not a shot at Valanciunas. They're just different. Right. And I think it's the mentality he brings to the team and everything that goes along with it. I think just Adams has been a good mix for this team in terms of just the toughness. Right. And there's always a look of just Adams just gives you a look. It's that Aquaman stare, I'm telling you. And it just makes guys like back down a little bit. And anybody that wants to cause a fight, he just comes in here going like, oh, what are we doing? You know, and it sort of just chills. And I think he's just been a good influence on the team for that. And I think he's done everything they asked him to.
When Memphis beat Brooklyn last weekend, they beat him by 14. I mean, but it really was a blowout. I think it was like 28-point lead. When Brooklyn brought in the bench, Memphis took 20 more shots than Brooklyn did. I mean, I'm not an analytics guy, Seth, but it feels like if you can take 20 more shots than your opponent, you're putting yourself in good position to win some games.
It helps, certainly helps. I agree with Mo that you know, Valanciunas may be a better player than Adams. I think they're pretty comparable, actually, but it's what he does is sort of an odd, you know, fit next to how Ja wants to play. This was sort of the Steven Adams almost had the reverse problem in New Orleans last year. I mean, we talked about this last year where they had, you know, of the five guys in their starting lineup, there are four different styles that those guys wanted to play and didn't really make sense. And I think that, you know, whatever style New Orleans wants to play this year has kind of been out the window anyway, but we don't need to talk about that. But for Memphis, like, again, yeah, you can't throw Steven Adams the ball in the post and let him mash like you could Valanciunas. That's almost like, I mean, I described it as over the offseason, that's training wheels for them. And they need to take those off and kind of see what this more kind of spread offense around Ja looks like. And so far, pretty good.
Well, Steven Adams is back in that role that he played in OKC for all those years, right? Like, I mean, he's doing the dirty work. He's actually working from the elbow. You can see that passing, you know, that we haven't been able to see for the last few years. And also, man, Jonas took touches away from, mentioned Ja, but also Jaren. And these are the guys that need to go off. I mean, we're seeing Desmond Bain, a little bit of addition by subtraction by trading out Grayson Allen. Look at how great Bane has been able to be for them, and he was barely getting minutes at times last year, and even though probably was a better player already than Grayson Allen. So, you know, it just feels like they've got a lot of momentum behind them, and maybe they are a team that's saving up for a trade. I mean, we know how small markets work, and that team certainly has been ahead of the curve. So
I if only somebody on this podcast said, hey, I think Memphis is going to finish in the top six. Oh, wait. I don't listen to you guys. I just go with what I I just plug my own.
Okay. Well, you know what? How about this though? Speaking of teams that surprised us.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more. Mo, tell me how you saw the Bulls coming, because they're on like the sneakiest 8-game winning streak, and they're the sneakiest one seed at like basically the halfway point of the season that I can remember since I've been doing this, which isn't that long.
As much as I want to throw stones at Mo, like this is not one I can throw in terms of, you know, having spent some time strongly questioning the acquisition of a guy who is certainly in contention for an all NBA first team spot, DeMar DeRozan.
It's like, you mean okay. MVP?
Yeah. You know, the yeah.
Yeah. No, I think everyone collectively, we all loved them signing Lonzo. We all loved them signing Alex Caruso. And we all kind of said, huh? When they signed DeRozan. And even me, who has been a DeRozan defender the last few years, I still was like, huh? Oh my gosh. I can't. No one knew it was going to work this well. No.
So I'll say this. Like, I think we all figured that DeRozan would make them better. But yes. What they gave up and how much they paid him is like, well, he's going to make them that much better. And as it turns out, yes. So we did not. It turns out that DeMar DeRozan as a point four with shooting around him and elite defensive backcourt actually makes for a good team. So who knew? Arturis Karnisovas, apparently. So kudos to him. But yeah, no, it's like, you know, if we're wearing massive L's around our necks, that's the sort of the biggest charm on that charm bracelet.
Yeah, no, and it's fair, but also who could see DeMar DeRozan at age 32 having a career freaking year, right? And all of that stuff. And listen, I'll take the L, you know. We kind of got to, and that's the fun part about the season and things like that is these type of things happening. But it's been a ton of fun, you know, watching this team, and it's fun for the league when Chicago is good. But I really think the key to all of this is Lonzo, and this is very similar to look the Clippers and Kawhi and Paul George, Boston with the two J's, right? Like there, it's you could look at LaVine and DeRozan and go like, wow, that it's very similar, except they have the one guy, right? The connector, the guy that doesn't need a lot of shots, going to keep the ball moving, going to keep it flying, always going to make the right pass, be on top of those things. And that's something those other teams don't have. And I think that's something those other front offices need to look at going like, damn, we kind of need one of those.
Also, you know, DeMar has been doing this playmaker thing. He started it the last couple of years in Toronto, but wasn't doing it like he did it the last few years in San Antonio. And he essentially changed situations and got a lot more talent around him. And so, you know, you're seeing DeMar's been pretty damn good the last few years offensively. Defensively has been okay, in San Antonio. But this is, I think defensively, he's having one of his best seasons. You can see where his hands, like, I mean, he's deflections all over the place. So, you know, it's one of these things where he's being used properly as well on the defensive end. And you know, you're mentioning Lonzo there. just having a guy who knows how to move the ball between those two has been big. And if you look at the numbers for Vooch when his turnaround started, that's really when, you know, and of course they had some roster weirdness just like everybody else in the league, but their numbers really start taking off with Vooch, because now you've got, I mean, you got a three-headed offensive monster out there.
Yeah, I mean, I think just a slow start with Vooch and everything, and it was like, remember, we were all kind of just saying, like, and Vucevic hasn't even gotten going yet, and now he's beginning to find that groove. It's, I mean, they're good. They're a very, very, very good team, you know, and let's see how this progresses, because now we're about halfway through the season. Again, it's we've seen this from teams before, right? And the All-Star break comes, and then I've been on those teams before, and they kind of just fall apart in the second half of the season. So they're an awesome story right now, and hopefully it continues that way.
So the interesting thing for me, and you're talking about DeRozan defensively, and I think he's been better defensively, but it's also that the synergy around like the four perimeter, like the five out with Vooch and the perimeter guys has been so good that it's like you know we worried about their matchups defensively, but they've been so good on that end that they're forcing the other team to adjust first. So it's like, oh well, DeRozan guarding a four, well you can't play a four because who's he going to guard? So that's almost the way that they've almost powered through what would have been some matchup weirdness and you know made it so that they you know that, okay, well, you have your third and fourth best wings on the floor too, because you have to guard these guys. So now who can Levine and DeRozan are guarding these, you know, mediocre bench wings, and as Caruso and Ball, you know, take on the tough assignments. So that's like they've offensed their way into good defense almost.
Billy Donovan is like one of like eight guys that I could probably make a case for coach of the year halfway through the season. And that's pretty incredible. I mean, we've talked about this a lot. There's not really bad coaches in the league anymore. I mean, maybe there's a couple, the jury's still out on the new guys. You know, you got to give them a couple years. But man, Billy Donovan, he's just got these guys playing so well, and the connectedness on both ends has been very impressive for a team that's, the major pieces there are really new. I'm very impressed with them.
The big worry for them is you kind of scratch the surface and it gets, you know, it gets thin pretty quickly. Like Ayo Dosunmu has been really, really, really fun as a rookie. But if he's like your sixth man heading into the playoffs, you're kind of you cringe about that a little bit. So just wondering if they think that they're like a guy away from being a contender, and that's where you start to like who might be interested in Patrick Williams and going and getting something done that way. So they're sort of an interesting, sneaky kind of trade in candidate.
Yeah, and if anybody hesitates on like, oh, Patrick Williams has all of this upside, yo, you're trying to win a championship right now. And no shot to Patrick Williams. He might be a fine player. He's not the guy that's going to win you a championship right now. And if there's an opportunity to make the trade, whatever it may be, to get you the piece that you believe is going to win you the championship this season or next season, you have no hesitation. You have to have no hesitation in trading Williams. Too many teams get stuck with we love this guy so much, we're never going to trade him. And then they miss the boat on trading him. There are a few exceptions, but very few. Patrick Williams ain't one of them.
Enough about James Wiseman. Let's move on to
yes, keep going. I was going to say his name too.
You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture themed trophies for six basketball related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill You Might Win Some But You Just Lost One trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them. You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Guys, Kyrie is back. Made his debut. We're recording this Thursday, January 6th. He made his debut Wednesday night in Indiana. Scored 22 points. What'd you guys think? I mean, this is going to be kind of brief because we only got one game. But, I mean, kind of looked like Kyrie.
His conditioning, I mean, guy comes off a long layup, the first thing you worry about is conditioning, and like that looks like he looked like he's in really good shape and was able to, you know, play minutes and still have a lot left in the tank at the end of the game. So, you know, that's as far as what you're looking at for right now. That's from a basketball standpoint, that's the thing that stood out to me. You know, the weirdness of him playing half the games is still going to be weird. And on the other hand,
I'm hoping that Kyrie makes a decision and plays all the games. That would be fantastic.
Yeah. At the same time, though, like, you know, we were at the beginning of the season. It's like, well, they're going to avoid the distraction of having guys in and out. Well, everybody's having guys in and out. So what's one more? So it's almost like the background the situation almost makes that part less of a disruption because everyone's disrupted already.
Yeah. One thing I'll say, Seth, about the conditioning stuff, because you're right, he looked good in this game. But for me, conditioning is over a couple of games, right? It's the recovery afterwards and get to the next game. Lucky for him, they're home the next two games. Yeah, so right. He's going to be conditioned. He's able to recover very easily in that regard. But I think the thing was, and it wasn't that he was conditioned as much as there didn't seem to be a lot of rust, you know? And I think that was the important thing I wanted to see, you know, and, you know, the first quarter was a little bit shaky, but after that he started to get in his groove. And then we saw him down the stretch with everything, but there were things I saw in that game where I was like, man, the Nets have been missing this. There's a play where he comes off I think it was a double high pick and roll. And it just, with the pace, it wasn't even super fast, but with the pace with which he did it, it pulled two defenders and he was able to find Nick Claxton for a dunk, you know? And I think it's just, that's something like you don't see too much from Harden doing that. You don't see too much from KD doing that. And I think that's what the Nets have kind of missed when we've been saying like, man, the Nets don't feel right yet. It's because that right there. And I think that's the important thing. How this will play out, I have absolutely no idea. I feel like we're just dealing with a unprecedented sort of situation and this is a case study, you know, and depending how it succeeds, I wouldn't be surprised if a few other guys are like, huh, only play road game. I can see some guys going like, what if I just play home games? You remember when Phil Jackson just wanted to coach?
That's what I was thinking of.
You know, and it's like, I wonder if we're going to start to see some of this stuff of their success. It's a copycat league.
The interesting thing is thinking back, like we kind of batted the idea around of, you know, cause Chris Bosh couldn't fly.
Right.
So it's like, you know, home game, Chicago and Indiana, like is sort of like,
well, until playoff time. Right. And then in which case, you know, maybe you got the Madden bus, you know, and you make it work. Shout out to John Madden who, you know, passed away. You know, that's an interesting thought, Mo. I mean, and this is a team, I do want to say, you know, with them missing Kyrie all this time, remember they built this team with him in mind. So it makes sense, right? Like, and he fit right into what they've been doing and what they want to do.
Another point on the Nets that I think is something that should be worrisome to a lot of the rest of the league is since the start of December, remember how we were worried that like the new rules were going to like destroy James Harden and blah, blah, blah. Since the start of December, he's averaging almost 11 free throws a game. Like he hasn't shot the ball great from the outside, but he's getting to the rim, getting to the line. He's averaging like just his, you know, over his last 11 games with kind of a COVID absence in between, he's averaging 25, 8.5 rebounds, 10.5 assists and almost a steal and a half. Like James Harden is playing really well and KD has been playing at an MVP level all year. And now you add, you know, this other ingredient in and it's like, oh yeah, that's why everyone was terrified of this team.
And they've surprised us up until the last couple of weeks with how well they've defended. Now, part of that may be, you know, some of the personnel decisions they've been forced to make, but some of that might be a little bit of luck. I don't know. It feels like their defense is starting to come back down to earth a little bit.
I would say that is a lot of fortune with opponent jump shooting that they've had this year. I haven't looked since last night's game, but they were first in opponent field goal percentage on long twos, corner threes, and second on against above the break threes. And those are kind of the shots where defense has the least impact on opponent shooting. So if a team is just like awesome at all those, especially a team where you can't really think of a plausible reason why they're doing something special, it's like that's that they're gonna get hit hard with the variant stick, I think.
Gosh, disrespectful to Patty Mills. Patty Mills is just, you know,
lockdown defender. Did you see his block the other day? He came down off his guy and came in and I couldn't even finish that part of the bit. But you know, we also have seen it last for a while. I mean, didn't we talk about this with the Knicks all year last year?
Right.
And then it normalized at a very unfortunate time for them in the playoffs.
but what really killed them in the playoffs was their offense.
Yeah.
More than their defense in that situation. Like, I'm not saying you're at all wrong. I'm not arguing with you on this stuff. Cause you know, you use big words like regression. I just learned it last week. It's a
progression for you, Mo.
New word. Let me write that one down. The thing is though, it is something that can last for a while and things like that. But you made your tweet was the most impressive. That's why I retweeted it going like pin this, you know, cause if the regression does happen, it's not going to be because Kyrie's playing half these games and this and that and all of that stuff. And everybody needs to remind themselves of that. It's just going to be at a certain point. Teams are probably going to hit shots on them if they're left wide open, you know, and there is always an element of luck to the defense and everything you're doing. And I think that's just that was such an important tweet, Seth, that I think, you know, and it's going to get missed because you're going to see it on several different broadcasts. Team, you know, guys yelling at each other. It's going to be that. And I think it's a very nuanced opinion there that we just have no room for these days.
I think, I mean, we already saw a little bit of it early in the year with Ja. Like, you know, he did like the on-off splits in terms of opponent three-point shooting were just ridiculous with him. And so it's like, oh man, they defend so much better with him. And they defend, like, if Tyus Jones is at the one, they defend better than if Ja Morant is at the one, just because, well, he's a much better defensive player because Ja is, frankly,
not
one
a good
of the worst
defender.
Yeah, one of the worst, like, frankly, one of the worst defenders in the year in the league. But then he misses time and sort of that it kind of snaps back into place. And I was like, oh, Ja Morant, Ewing theory. And then it's like, no. Since he's been back, like, that is sort of normalized. That split has sort of normalized, and all of a sudden it's like, oh no, they're actually much better. Just period with him on the floor, because like he's a top what player in the league at this point? Top 20, top 15? Is that
probably 15?
Yeah, are we getting ahead of ourselves?
I mean, like, you know, so no. And I mean, this is maybe a conversation for a different day, because the way I look at it, it depends, right? Like, where are we at this moment in time? I try not to take a long view on that. And which is, it can get me in trouble if you go back and you're looking for something evergreen, but I don't really care. I will say this. I bet if we look at their road offense for the rest of the season, I guarantee that road office is going to be insane. Like if they if they lose another road game this year, right? Or if they went undefeated on the road for the rest of this year, it would not shock me because Kyrie is that much of, and he's going to be fresh. Oh man.
Oh, they're going to be the greatest like road heel team of all time.
I hope they lean in.
Like Kyrie's going to be cutting a promo in every pregame press thing. Oh man.
Here we go with wrestling.
Yeah.
Okay. Speaking of wrestling, I don't know how this is not a good transition. Steph Curry looks like he's wrestling.
Oh, playing basketball. Dave,
he looks exhausted.
You missed the easy transition.
Which was?
We're talking about arrested Kyrie, and now we got a tired Steph Curry.
We do. I mean, guys, Steph looks exhausted, and I just don't – I can't remember seeing him looking like his legs were this dead. One of the things that's so special about him, and we've talked about this a lot, is that he essentially is a human basketball play. You just let him go run around the court. He cuts at different angles. He comes off split cuts, comes off screens. He sets screens. He does all these things. And it's odd to watch him, as I did last night in the game against the Mavs, just really he looked like he just had it, didn't have his legs under him at all.
I think that's been kind of the case essentially since, you know, the all-time three-point record kind of started in earnest. I think you know, people are going to draw the straight line there, but I think it's much more about like he was so good for the back half of last season and so good for the first half of this season that especially with kind of the Warriors still having kind of some limitations in shot creation, like there's a lot of games where the fourth quarter is Steph will figure it out. For them, like they're so much of what they do offensively for the first three quarters is a lot of movement and system buckets and using like the, you know, the high field players, whether it's, you know, Gary Payton second cutting out of the corners or Otto Porter and Nemanja Bjelica doing their stuff. And then the fourth quarter, it's a lot of the ball cycles as people are looking for Steph to come off this maze of handoffs and picks. And it's just like, that's hard work. And, you know, that's just, it's almost too much to ask of him to do that for a whole season. And, you know, we're kind of seeing a little bit of a slump there. It's not as bad a slump as he was in, you know, remember last year before he went for 60 against Portland, like he was in the worst, literally the worst slump of his career. So it's not like we haven't seen this before and recently. So he's just, I think it's mostly, he's just going through a little blip and he's, like you say, he's tired. But that's not a permanent condition. That's a temporary thing that perhaps they could fix.
I mean, just the way he plays is a very tiring way,
yeah.
Right? It's all the running. It's all the bring the ball up the court, pass it. Okay, I got to cut. Okay, I'm going to stop. Now I'm going to go again. And I got it. It's just in one possession, he's making three or four cuts and moves and coming off screens. It's the way you said, the maze of dribble handoffs and all that. And it's almost doing that on every offensive possession. Like it is a tiring thing. And I think that leads to those, just the fatigue a little bit in all of that. And the weight, you know, the all time 3-point record was a thing and you could see it as you talked about pressing and all that stuff. I think it will get a little bit easier if Klay Thompson can be on the court more once he comes back, and hooray, he sounds like he's coming back on Sunday. Going to be fun to finally watch him again. And if he can play at a consistent level for the Warriors, I think he'll make things a little bit easier on Steph. I mean, Jordan Poole had a monster game in that game that Steph struggles, you know, and it was Utah, right? Or am I mixing stuff up? He had a monster. Poole blew up a night when Steph struggled. I can't remember. It all blends into one game for me. Sorry, guys.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we watched too much basketball. Yeah.
You know, but like it's nice for the Warriors to have that, but it's hopefully when Klay comes, they'll be able to have that. And there's going to be renewed energy just off of that, right? The adrenaline and the emotion of Klay back on the court. You're going to see him go completely nuts whenever he makes a bucket.
Yeah. That team momentum that they're going to get from getting Klay back. I think that honestly, and I don't know, I haven't talked to anybody around the team to ask. I wonder if a little bit of the fatigue they're running into now isn't some of that is like maybe a little bit of emotional fatigue as well? I mean, it's hard to play at the level that they've played at this season and, you know, for this long. And you mentioned just Steph generally, but I think the team itself could use some juice, and that Klay Thompson coming back is going to be big. Let's also not overlook the fact that this season has been one of Steph's higher effort defensive seasons as well. I mean, he has been as physical as I can remember on the defensive end without fouling as much, which is crazy. But I think that maybe that's playing into this as well. And again, I mean, it's, you know, it's a couple of bad games in at the end of December and January. I'm not worried about Steph Curry, but yeah, Mo, I'm with you, man. I think Klay coming back is going to be just a shot of adrenaline for the whole team, man. The vibes are going to come back. That's what they need, is a vibe lift.
Is this, I mean, we're talking about fatigue. Is this the point where we point out that Steph does turn 34 in March?
No.
And no. He's a very well-conditioned athlete, but at a certain point, like, you know, that what's the stuff that starts to go as you get older is that recovery. And
the finishing at the basket has me, you know, at least I'm paying attention to it. I'll put it that way. I'm not like worried about it, but it's enough. Like, he's so good at finishing at the rim for him to be this off. I am starting to look at it a little bit. It looks like he's avoiding contact quite a bit. And I wonder if that's a little bit of a reaction to the way that he feels he's been officiated. Like, he has to avoid contact in order to give himself a chance to make shots because he doesn't feel like he's going to get free throws. I'm not sure. But I do know that he's off, and they need him to look. They need Steph Curry to be on if they want to be as dominant as they were. But we see they still win games even when he's struggling.
Yeah, no question. I mean, this is the team. They're rolling right now with their guys, right? And it's not just Poole. It's Bellalitza. It's Porter Jr. It's, you know, getting unbelievable minutes from Gary Payton the second. And I want to talk about him in a second before I finish this point. But the role players have all kind of stepped up in that sense with everything they're doing. And, you know, to just kind of go back to Gary Payton, the little mitten, as I like to call him, is, you know, even as a non-shooter, he's still affecting the offense because what he's doing is just so many great cuts. And I think it's a case study for guys who aren't necessarily a good shooter to understand that, like, I can affect games. Because there's a play where Kyle Lowry literally is ignoring him in the corner when they played the Heat. He's like, yo, he's a bad shooter. I don't care about him. I'm coming to help all the way on this drive. And what does GP do? Just cuts along the baseline and gets hit. Curry hits him with a no-look pass, and he gets a layup out of it. Like, it's those small things that they're getting out of these young guys that I think will carry him a long way. My only concern is, and this was the same concern I had with Phoenix last year, a lot of those guys are unproven in the playoffs. And so that will be and Phoenix, those guys proved themselves last year. It'll be a question if these guys can do it.
I mean, the two most important guys are pretty well playoff proven. So
there's five on the court. It's not,
I think that is a distinct, like Phoenix was so inexperienced top to bottom last year. They were unprecedentedly inexperienced to be a finals team last year. Right. So that's, you know, I think that Golden State between Steph and Draymond and Klay coming back, and Looney has been there for a while, and even some of their role guys have been around for you know, like Damian Lee has been around for some of that stuff, and obviously Bielitsa's got, you know, maybe not deep runs in the NBA, but he certainly has international experience. So they have. While I agree with you that's like some of their guys, like Jordan Poole, it's going to be his first rodeo, but they do have plenty of institutional knowledge over and above what Phoenix had last year. My bigger worry for them is, and this is, you know, is there's just some matchup stuff that was really highlighted, I think, in that first Phoenix game where they just had nothing for DeAndre Ayton. DeAndre Ayton, Anthony Davis, like, depending on who you see, even if you make the finals, you run into Giannis or Joel Embiid or whoever, like, That's a matchup worry for them. That's not just an experience thing, but yeah.
Do you think they need to solve their their big man rotation? Like, do they need a serviceable large guy? I mean, by the way, the news just came out that the Suns are signing Bismack Biyombo through the rest of the season. I mean,
does Chris Paul get a cut of that deal?
Chris Paul gets a cut of all these deals. He has a small clause in his contract. Deal. You know,
yeah, that. I mean, that's so funny. But yeah, like it's pretty obvious to me that I mean, look, Kevon Looney is a nice player, right? And Draymond Green, I think, is one of the best centers of the modern era. That's where I'm at with Draymond. But at a certain point, having a large dude does actually matter when you have other large dudes who are good.
I mean, I've basically like trade two of your young guys for Miles Turner. Let's go. Like that's where I've been. That's where I've been all year for them. So, and I like, it was, again, as much as, you know, we liked what we've seen from Kuminga, like Steph is 34 or going to be 34 in the playoffs this year. And you're trying to win a title. What are we doing here? Like let's, you know, elite rim protected guy who fits with them offensively. What are we doing?
Call it in, Mo.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think we've talked about it on this pod before. Yes. Literally saying doing this exact thing. I can't do my rant about the Bulls and then say like, no, the Warriors shouldn't go all
right.
No, I agree with Seth in that. And I agree with you, Dave. They do need to kind of bolster that front line because eventually you're going to face a big guy. And you know, listen, Draymond versus Anthony Davis, I'm okay with that. I think I'm fine there. You know, but we saw it with DeAndre Ayton. If you get to the finals and you end up having to play Giannis, that's going to be an issue for them. If by some small miracle Philly gets to the finals, you're going to have to deal with Embiid. Like
whoever gets healthy, you got Jokic.
You know, you got to deal with all of the possibilities there, right? And it's having that versatility on your lineup, and you know. Turner fits. It's kind of like it's everything we're talking about. Like Turner kind of fits their mold very well and can help them in a long way. And this isn't a shot at Looney. Looney's been awesome.
He's great.
I think he's made great strides for what, you know, where he was a few years ago in the passing and things like that. But you need another body to go with it. Cause I don't know if Draymond can do it. And if DeAndre Ayton finds the aggressive gene, I'm praying is going to kick in at some point and be a dominant and play with force as a big man. I think then the Warriors would even be in a lot of trouble with that. So I think, you know, you got to make the move.
Cool. Well, January 15th coming up, I think moves are going to start happening if they're going to happen. I don't think people are going to wait until the deadline, Seth. I think you might see some proactive moves as soon as that January 15th date hits because teams are too tight. The standings are too tight.
If you think this move helps you and you get eight extra games by doing it January 17th instead of waiting for mid-February, like that's, you know, you get an extra game or two that could be worth 3-4 spots in the standings this year. So I think that's something to keep an eye on. Definitely.
That's going to do it for the show this week, folks. Don't forget, go to theathletic.com/NBA show, sign up, support the show, let them know that you listened and that you like us. For Seth and Mo, I'm Dave. Hope you guys have a great rest of your week. We'll catch you guys next week on another episode of Nerder She Wrote.